For sure. Socrates poisoned again after 25 centuries. Responses to questions from disciples and press correspondents given in Crete, Greece. Discourse number 25.
Book 1. These questions are for Breath, a Dutch New Age magazine. The first question is, can you tell us about your connection with Guru Krishnamurti?
In the same place. in meeting India's inner influence. And Krishnamurti wants to meet. The man who said this was a very respected revolutionary of India, a chief for the world. He was one of the closest colleagues of the Krishnamurti. I looked into his eyes and said, please don't deny. You must have said to the Krishnamurti that Rajni wants to meet you. He was shaken up there. Almost half. They said, how you could manage to know it? That's exactly what we have been conspired. We knew perfectly well that this is the only possible way. If we say to you, Krishnamurti wants to meet you, you cannot refuse. If I say to Krishnamurti that he wants to meet you, he cannot refuse. And the people who have been connected with Krishnamurti have all become connected with you too. We are all eager to see what conspires when you two both meet. I simply told Achyut Patwardhan, an old of two great mystics, Kabir and Farid. Kabir had his commune near Varanasi on the opposite side of the Ganges. And Farid was traveling with his disciples. He was a Mohammedan, a Sufi mystic. And he was going to pass the village where Kabir was living. The disciples of both persuaded them that it will not be right that Farid passes from here and he do not invite him. Kabir's disciple said, it is simply a matter of love to invite those people to live in our commune for a few days to rest, and the disciples of Farid said that it will not look right to bypass the commune of Kabir. At least we as good. Just to pay our tribute. Parikh and Kabir both agreed. But the real thing amongst the disciples of both was they wanted to see what happens when they meet, what they talk about. What are the things that are important between two persons who are enlightened? 2 days passed. Kabir and Farid hugged each other. Wept tears of joy. Laughed like madmen, but never uttered a word. And after 2 days, Hari went on his pilgrimage. Kabir had come to give him a send off out of the town. Again they hugged each other, looked into each other's eyes, laughed, and departed. The disciples of both were very much disappointed. This was not they were waiting for. The moment both the mystics had departed, they had to face their disciples. The disciples were really angry. The disciples of Kabir said that you made a fool of us. For 2 days we have been waiting to listen something. And you are always talking. And what happened to you? You became suddenly silent. And we do not understand what is this matter of laughter like madmen, weeping, tears, smiles, hugging, but not saying a single word. And the same was the situation with Kari. The same problem the disciples were raising. And the answer was also the same that was given. Farid and Kabir virtually said the same thing to their disciples, that we both know there is nothing to say. He has eyes, I have eyes. We both have a feeling. We both have tasted the truth. What is there to say? Whoever would have uttered a single word would have been proved ignorant, that he does not know. We recognize each other. It is impossible not to recognize. Even to blind people, if you recognize each other, do you think two people with eyes will not recognize each other? Of course we enjoy each other, that's what joy. If my tears were the only possible language, then it was too much we hugged each other. We were sitting holding each other's hands for hours. And our love was flowing, and there was a communion, two bodies and one soul. But forgive us. You completely forgot about it. You cannot understand anything except words, and truth cannot be expressed in words. You have every right to be disappointed, to be angry, but you should consider our position also. We are helpless. When two silences meet, they become one. When two loving hearts beat, they beat in harmony. A music arises which is not mundane. It cannot be heard by the ear, which can be heard only by those who can experience it in their heart. I told Akshat Patwardhan, it is absolutely useless wishing Krishnamurti's time and you are not going to hear anything. And when they went back to Krishnamurti, he asked, what happened? He had not come. And they told their story, that he simply told their story. And he laughed. And he said he did exactly the right thing. In fact, I should have told you the story, but I don't know the story. I also wanted to explain to you that it is futile. But you would not have understood. And you are asking me about my connection with it. it was the deepest possible place which needs no physical contest, which needs no linguistic communication. Not only that, once in a while I used to criticize him. He used to criticize me. And we enjoyed each other's criticism, knowing perfectly well that he does not mean it. And now that he is dead, I will miss him. Because I will not be able to criticize him. It won't be right. It was such a joy to criticize him. He was the greatest intelligent man of this century. But he was not understood by our people. He has died and seems the world goes on its way without even looking back for a single moment that the greatest intelligent man is no more there. It is difficult for centuries to find that sharpness and that intelligence again. Because people are sleepwalkers. They have not taken much note. In newspapers, just in a small corner where nobody reads, his death is declared, and it seems 90 years old man who has been continuously speaking for almost 70 years. Moving around the world, trying to help people to get unconditioned, trying to help people to become free. Nobody seems to even pay tribute to the man who has worked hardest in the whole history for man's freedom, for man's dignity. I don't feel sorry for his death. His death is beautiful. He has attained all that life is capable to give. But I certainly feel sorry for the whole world. it goes on missing its greatest lights of consciousness, its highest peak, its brightest stars. It is too much concerned with striving. I feel such a deep affinity with Krishnamurti that even to talk of connection is not right. Connection is possible only between two things which are separate. I feel almost oneness with it. In spite of all of my criticisms, in spite of all his criticisms, which was just joking with the old man. Provoking the old man. And he was very easily provoked. Just, I had to send my sannyasins to these meetings and sit in front of all in red colors, and he will go mad. He could not tolerate the red color. In his past life, he must have been a Buddha. Just a red flag. And the Buddha was crazy. The Buddha had their own personality. Even though he used to become angry, he will forget his subject matter he was going to talk, and he will start criticizing me and my people. And later on, he will say to the hostess that he was saying, this guy is something about me. That he disturbs my meeting, sending red robed people, and the moment I see them, I forget what is the subject I have decided to. And it happens every time, and I know that he is simply playing a joke. He is not serious. He is not against me. Neither I am against him. From many of his intimate people, I have been informed that he is not against me. He wants you to know that howsoever angry he becomes, he is not against you. I said to them that I know it. I love the man. But to love a man and once in a while to joke with him, do you think it is contradictory? In fact, I am trying to help him to become a little less serious, little more sense of humor will not do any harm to him. Only on that point I do not agree with him. He is too serious. And religion needs a certain quality of humor to make it more human. If there is no sense of humor in any religious teaching, it becomes more and more intellectual, mathematical, logical. But it loses the human touch. It becomes more and more a scientific subject, but man cannot be just an object of scientific aesthetics. There is something in him which transcends scientific aesthetics. Just look around the world. Trees don't laugh. Buffaloes don't laugh. No animal laughs. It is only the man who has the sense of humor. There must be something in it, because it happens at the highest evolutionary point, man. His teaching is beautiful, but too serious. And my experience and feeling is that his 70 years went in a wastage, because he was serious. So only people who are long faces and miserable and serious types collected around them. He was a collector of corpses. As he became older, those corpses also became older. I know people who have been hearing him almost their whole life. They are as old as he himself was. They are still alive. One woman I know who is 95. I know many people and one thing I have seen in all of them which is common, that is there is too much seriousness. Life needs a little playfulness. A little too much. A little laughter. Only on that point I am absolutely agreeing. Otherwise, he was a genius. And he has penetrated as deeply as possible into every dimension of man's existence. But it is all like desert. Time. I would like you back into the Garden of Eden. Innocence, not serious, but that is not serious. Play. And this whole existence is playful. This whole existence is full of so much. Just you need a sense of humor and you will be surprised. Heard about a man who used to sell in India Gandhi caps, particularly at election time. Everybody wants to prove that he is a Gandhian because the followers of Gandhi have been ruling the country for 40 years. If you are a Gandhian, your victory in election is certain. And the Gandhian cap, a white cap, symbolizes who you are. And this man used to earn much money just by making caps and selling them. But this year he was sick, he was getting old, and he told his young son that you will have to go to the marketplace, which was few miles away from the village. And I have to tell you only one thing, that the way is beautiful. On both the sides are very shady trees. That even in the hot sun, you can sit under them and it is cool. And there is one big Bodhi tree, so huge 100 a bullock cart can rest underneath it. A wagon. If you feel like resting, don't rest under that tree. The person said, but why? Because that must be the most coolest place. The father said, that is the problem. It is the coolest place. But the tree is full of monkeys. And what happened with me, I was resting there, and when I woke up, my whole bag of cats was empty. I was surprised, what happened? And then I suddenly heard monkeys enjoying all were having cats. Just the way I was having a cat, so they know how to put it, where to put it. And it was looking as if the whole New Delhi, from the president, prime minister, and the cabinet, and all the parliamentarians, are sitting there all over the food, and they are enjoying it so much. But I am a poor man. Suddenly I remember a saying that monkey always imitates. So I took away my cap so they all can see. They all took away their cap. And I threw my cap. They all threw their cap. I collected the cap and went to the market. So just remember, in case something like this happens, take your cap and throw it. They will not show it. The sun was, in a way, excited to rest under the same tree and see what happened. He found the tree, it was beautiful, most steady, and he saw hundreds of monkeys sitting on it. He rested, went to his sleep, and exactly what the father had said had happened. The bag was empty. He looked up, and the monkeys were looking very happy, very proud, all gone here. But he was not worried because he knew the trick. So he simply took out his cap and threw it. And to his great surprise, one monkey came down and took no cap, went back on the tree, put the cap on his head, and they all were enjoying because this monkey has missed. One cat was left. And this must be the second generation of the monkeys. Perhaps the older generation has taught them that if sometimes it happens, don't throw your cat, but pick up the thrown cat by the machine. We have been befooled. Once to be befooled is okay. Twice to be befooled is unpardonable. The son looked in a shock what to do. He came back home, he told his father said, I am needy. Monkeys are more capable of learning than men. This is their second generation and they have remembered. And I had told you specifically, you should not have thrown so quickly. First you should have taken it out and seen whether they have taken it out or not. Otherwise, at least you could have saved one cat. You lost even that. Existence is hilarious. Everything is in a dancing mood. Just you have to be in the same mood to understand it. I am not sorry that this Smriti is dead. There was nothing more to attain for him. I am sorry that his teaching did not reach the human heart because it was too dry, juiceless, no humor. No laughter. But you will be surprised to know that whatever he was saying is against religion, is against politics, is against the status quo, is against the whole path. Yet nobody was condemning. For the simple reason, because he was ineffective. There was no reason to take note of him. In India, he used to visit only three places, Delhi, Bombay, Madras. And the same way around the world, some big cities. And the same people, year after year, listening to him, the same thing. And nothing has changed in those people. Because nothing reached to their hearts. It remained only intellectual. They can argue. They can argue very well. One man I know, Dada Karmadhikari, he is a very famous follower of Gandhi, colleague of Gandhi, and colleague of Jetusamurti. He does not believe in God. He does not believe in any tradition. He used to come to see me, and I told him that not believing in God is not enough. Believing in God or not believing in God, both are God-centered. cannot say that I do not believe in God. How can I not believe in something which does not exist? Believing or not believing are both relevant when something is existential. But he was too full of Krishnamurti. I said, someday some opportunity may come and I will be able to point it to you that this belief is only a reaction. It does not erase God. It simply puts this belief in place of belief, but God remains in its place. His son is Attorney General of the High Court. One day he came very much disturbed and asked me to come immediately. My father is dying. He had a serious heart attack. And the doctors are worried that he may have another heart attack. And it will be difficult to save him. Perhaps he will be happy to see you. He always talks only of you or his Srimati. I went to his house. He was resting in a dark room. I entered his room. I told his son not to announce that I have come. And he was repeating Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, very silently, almost whispering. But I shook him and I said, have you forgotten Devasulukti? Have you forgotten me? What are you doing? Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. He said, this time don't disturb. Who knows? God may be a reality. And just to repeat few times before death, there is no harm. If he is there, I can say that I remembered you. If he is not there, there is no harm. Just let me repeat, no argument at this moment. I am dying. I said, that's what makes it very urgent to prevent you doing any stupid thing. This is against your whole life. He is 80 years old. Followed Krishnamurti almost for 50 years. Has been in contact with 20 years with me. And at the last moment, all intellectual garbage disappears. And the old conditioning appears again. This is what his parents have taught him in his childhood. Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. Because Hindus believe that in this dark age humanity, only the name of God can save. The name of God is like a boat. You simply ride on the boat and it will take you to the other side of existence, the spiritual world. He became okay, he did not die, and he has become almost right. I asked him about that day. He says, first all about it, there is no God. I don't believe in God. I said, again? Because now death is no more so close. That day you were not even willing to discuss about it. You were even arguing that at this moment, let me repeat the mantra that is going to save me. I said to him, all your intellectual garbage is useless. It has not reached to your heart. It has not given you any transformation. Krishnamurti failed because he could not touch human heart. He could only reach the human head. The heart needs some different approaches. There is where I have differed with him all my life. Unless the human heart is reached, you can go on repeating like parrots, beautiful words that don't mean anything. But whatever he was saying is true. But he could not manage to relate it to your heart. In other words, what I am saying is, Jai Krishnamurti was a great philosopher, but he could not become a master. He could not help people, prepare people for a new life. A new orientation. But still I love him. Because amongst the philosophers, he comes closest to the mystic way of life. He himself avoided the mystic way, bypassed it, and that is the reason of his failure. But he is the only one among the modern contemporary thinkers who come very close, almost on the boundary line of mysticism. and it starts there. Perhaps he is afraid that if he talks about mysticism, people will start falling into old patterns, old traditions, old philosophies of mysticism. That fear prevents him to enter. But that fear also prevents other people to enter into the mysteries of life. I have met thousands of Krishnamurti people, because anybody who has been interested in Krishnamurti, sooner or later is bound to find his way towards me, because where Krishnamurti lives then, I can take their hand and lead them into the innermost shrine of truth. You can say my connection with Krishnamurti is that Krishnamurti has prepared the ground for me. He has prepared people intellectually for me. Now it is my work to take those people deeper than intellect, to the heart, and deeper than the heart, to the being. Our work is one. Krishnamurti is dead, but his work will not be dead until I am dead. His work will continue.
The printing press was discovered by separate individuals in different places at about the same time. Will the same happen to consciousness? As more people become conscious, will there be an explosion in the world? Is consciousness contagious?
Yes, it is contagious. And this is exactly going to happen in the same way. Few individuals will explode and then it will become a wild fire. And there is no way to prevent it. It is a well-known fact, not only about sinful stresses, but about other difficulties. Printing press was discovered in different countries, unrelated to each other, almost at the same time. It is a strange phenomenon how it happens. Something seems to be invisible passing. Albert Einstein was asked that if you had not discovered theory of relativity, what do you think? Will it would be ever discovered or not? Albert Einstein laughed. He said, just at the most within 2 years, somebody else was going to discover. And he said, 2 years, I am saying the longest. It may have been only 2 weeks. Because human consciousness has come to a point where this discovery is going to happen. Who discovers is not important. Human consciousness is not individual island. It is a vast continent. The whole continent vibrates with the same rhythm. And it has been found in other discoveries also. Whatever is discovered in Soviet Union is kept secret. But all over the world, other scientists start discovering it. With no information from Soviet scientists. And whatever is discovered by America is kept secret. But in some mysterious way, the Soviet scientists discover it just within few weeks. Not more than that. Human consciousness is one whole. And anything happens at one place creates a certain vibration that moves all over. Wherever there is somebody capable to catch it, immediately catch it. There are things which cannot be kept secret. For example, enlightenment cannot be kept secret. There is no way to keep it secret. Meditation cannot be kept secret. It is not within your hands. It is happening deep down into your consciousness, and every other consciousness around you is going to be affected by it. You will see it in different spheres. For example, when Gautam Buddha appeared in India, Lao Tzu, Chuang Tzu, Confucius appeared in China, Socrates, Plato, Pythagoras appeared in Greece at the same time. The same flame, the same truth. And there is no communication. Even the Himalaya, the highest mountain between China and India, is not able to prevent what is happening to Lao-tzu and Chong-tzu. Passes on, moves on. If you look before the Soviet Communist Revolution in Soviet Russia, it produced the greatest number of the highest quality novelists, the most creative, and not one. Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, Chekhov, Gorky, Turchinev, all are Himalayan peaks, one better than the other. And even after 70, 80 years, we have not been able to produce anything comparable to Dostoevsky. But just within a small period, in a small place, these people appear. Consciousness is contagious. And after Soviet Revolution, not a single man in the 70 years has been able to produce even a far away echo of Maxim Gorky or Turchinev. Something in consciousness dies. Because communism denies that man has his soul. It prevented the very idea of consciousness. No poet, no great novelist, no great painter, no great artist, no great sculptor, all disappears. And before the revolution, Russia was producing the world's highest caliber people. Yes, this is going to happen. Once few people explode into light, they will become slaves. And the fire will spread like wildfire. That is the only hope for humanity. That the whole humanity comes up into consciousness. People become so alert that nobody can deceive them into any stupid act. And war is the most stupid act of all.
one. Science has developed tremendously in this last century, but science often seems so heartless. You talked about meditation as the inner science. Can you please talk about science and meditation? Shouldn't they go hand in hand?
They could go hand in hand. But you have to understand that neither mind can become meditation, nor meditation can become just mind. There are two dimensions of human existence. A man can be both. He can be a scientist in his lab, and he can be a meditator in his home. While he is meditating, he has to forget all about time while he is doing science research. He has to forget all about meditation. Only then they can go hand in hand. There are very complex and subtle problems. The problem is that the science has to be objective. And meditation has to be subjective. The science can experiment. In meditation, you cannot experiment. You can only experience. In science, the method is observation. In meditation, the method is witness. And there is a great difference. Science has an object before it. It can dissect it. It can find out what it is constituted of. It can go to the very roots, to molecules, to atoms, to electrons, to protons. It can go on detecting to find the ultimate stratum. But in meditation, there is no object. There is a subjectivity. Let me say it differently. In science, the scientist is working with something. In meditation, he is working with his own being. He cannot touch it. He cannot detect it. Who will cut it? Who will detect it? He is it. Who will observe? He is it. if this is understood, that science and meditation have opposite directions to move, one moves outward, one moves inward, but they need not be enemy. They can go hand in hand. Because it is the scientist in which they both meet. The scientist has to be alert not to mix them. He has to be alert that in scientific research he remains objective. And in meditation he forgets all objectivity and just becomes a pure subject, a silent witness. In the scientist is the meeting point. And it has to happen if we are going to save humanity.
Bhagwan, 25 centuries ago in Greece, there were many mystery schools. Are you a mystic? Please tell us about your mystery school.
You do not understand. About the word mystery or the word mystic or the phenomenon of the mystery or mystery. If anything can be said about them, they are no more mystery. A mystic is one who knows but cannot say. Who can live it? You can look into his eyes. You can look into his gesture. You can feel it in his presence. But there is no way to say it. Does not mean that the mystic remains silent. Many mystics have remained silent for the simple reason because everything that you say falls short. The essential thing that you wanted to say is not contained in the word. When you hear your own words, you know that which you wanted to convey is not conveyed. So many mystics have remained silent. few mystics have chosen to speak. Because it is possible not to say directly, but to create a situation through words in which it is indicated indirectly. For example, if I just remain silent for a second, just in the middle of sentence, you will feel my silence more than if I was silent for 2 hours here. If I was silent for 2 hours here, your mind will go on chattering inside. It will not be silent. But speaking to you, I suddenly remain silent for a second, your mind cannot start chattering because it is so involved with listening. And when I suddenly stop, it becomes more curious that what I am going to say. A full stop comes to your thinking, and it is there of silence may give you a little taste which can lead to great revolution of your being. There are devices which can be created which may not help you directly, but which can help indirectly. For that, a mystic has not only to be a mystic, he has also to be a master. This is a totally different art. That's why it becomes possible that there are masters who are not mystics. They are false. They know nothing. They just know the art of mastery. They can create the device, but they have nothing to convey. They can make the house, but the house is empty. And there are mystics who have too much to give, but they don't know how to give it. They are dumb. Rarely it happens that a master and mystic happen together in a man. A coincidence. Then the master can manage without saying it. Still he can manage to indicate to give you a certain taste of it. His devices will be all false. For example, there is an old story. A man comes back home in the evening. His wife is dead and he has small children. And the house is on fire and the small children are inside play. And the whole neighborhood is around the house, shouting to the children that get out. The house is on fire, but the children are too small. They don't understand why they should get out. In fact, they are enjoying the flames all around. Everything burning is such a wild firework. They have never seen such a beautiful scene. And they are dancing and they are playing and they don't care what the neighbors are shouting. And at that moment the father reaches. The house is completely in flames. And the neighbors say, "We have done everything, but your children are insane. They don't listen. And they are enjoying as if it is a game." And the father went close and shouted that, "I have brought your toys you have asked. All the toys I have brought." And they all came running out from the last door that was left. And they started asking, "Where are the toys?" And the father said, "Forgive me, toys I will bring tomorrow." But today that was the only way to bring you out. Now those toys was only a device. Those children will understand the toys. And they are waiting for their toys. They don't understand that the house is on fire and their life is at risk. The father is lying. But can you say that he is lying? He is simply creating a divide out of love and compassion. And he succeeds. And the children are out. And when he explains to them, they understand. And he promises that tomorrow your children will be brought to you. Your toys will be brought to you. So the children say, "Don't be worried about toys. Just forgive us because we forced you to laugh. We had no idea what is happening. It had never happened before. We were unexperienced." The master can create through words twice that can bring you out of the house which is on fire. Of course, you will not find those twice. But you will ask forgiveness from the Master that he forced you to love. It was your compassion, your love. It was your care and concern. I am a mystic, and my whole work is my mystery school. My sannyasins are part of the mystery school. In the ancient Greece, those mystery schools were very small schools. This is a mystery university. It is all around the world. But don't ask more. Anybody who is really interested, the only way to understand is to become part of this mystic teaching. Experience it. That's the only explanation.
Bhagwan, please talk to us more about the Holy Trinity. Truth, beauty, and love.
The first thing, you have inserted love on your own. It is not part of the Holy Spirit. I had said satyam. Satyam means truth. Shivam. Shivam means goodness. Sundaram. Sundaram means beauty. Don't try to cheat me. It is impossible. Love simply happens. The man of truth cannot be but loving. The man who understands beauty cannot be but loving. The man who lives all that is good cannot be but loving. Hence, love has not been included in the Trinity. That is a byproduct. These three things have been included in the Trinity because they are independent of each other. They are not byproducts. It is possible the man of truth may not have any sense for beauty. It is possible the man of sensitivity for beauty may not have any regard for truth. It is possible that a man may respect effect, beauty. But he may not live the life of goodness. They are independent. You can see it easily. There are poets who have immense sense of beauty. But if you see into their life, you will not find goodness or truth. You will find very ordinary people. Perhaps worse than ordinary. I used to live by the side of a very great poet who has translated Omar Khayyam in Hindustan, just like Fitzgerald has translated Omar Khayyam in English. This poet has far more understanding of Umar Khayyam than Fitzgerald. And his poetry is far more poetic and more beautiful than any other translation. Thousands of translations have been made. If you had read his book, because he has never done anything, he has only translated Umar Khayyam. Again and again, he went on polishing it, went on making it more and more beautiful. He devoted his whole life . It is the work of your whole life. But if you had seen the man, you would have been shocked. Such a beautiful poetry. Such great life. And the man was very ugly. Ugly in everything. He was a drunkard, using four-letter words the whole day. His family was in continuous trouble because he never worked. He had a line of children who were just almost orphans, although the father was alive, the mother was alive. His old father was alive, his own mother was alive. They were dying out of starvation. He had no consideration for anybody, no compassion for anybody. All that he needed was more money to go to the pub. And every day people were bringing him absolutely drunk. He was lying down in a gutter or on the street, and somebody will recognize him and bring him home. But whenever he was conscious, he was continuously working on Umar Khayyam. He has a tremendous quality as far as poetry is concerned, but in every other respect. Even below ordinary humans, he was ready to lie. He was lying every day to me, just to get some money. Because he needed money for drink. And I had told him that you need not lie to me. You simply ask for the money. And I am not borrowing to you. I am simply giving it to you out of friendship. You need not remember that you have to return it back. But lying was such a habit to him that he will lie that my father is very sick today. And I have to call the doctor. I said, I know. The doctor must be in the pub. Take the money, go to the pub, call the doctor. And next day I will say, what happened to the doctor? He said, who? What doctor? Who needs doctors? No sense of truth, no sense of sincerity, no love, but a great understanding of beauty. So those three qualities are the Trinity. Other qualities are byproducts. And love is such that all three contribute to love. As if three rivers meeting into one river, that becomes love. Love is not a trinity. Love is one river. Sense of beauty, the sense of truth, the sense of goodness, all contribute. Love is higher than the Trinity. Trinity means three, and all those three disappear into love. Love is one. That's why I go on saying, love is God. There is no God. Love itself is